Welcome to In Season, where we explore the farming and gardening in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff. Today on In Season, we're talking about fruit tree grafting with Scott Thompson of Blackberry Bog Farm in Svenson, Oregon. Grafting was always something that I thought was going to be way too complicated for me to ever get the hang of, but Scott managed to teach me the basics of grafting a couple of years ago, and thanks to his patience and careful demonstration, I was actually able to successfully graft a copy of my friend Jane's fabulous old apple tree onto new rootstock to grow out on our farm. With all the wonderful old fruit trees growing in and around our communities, I'm really hoping that we can save some of the best ones before they disappear by grafting them and growing them on for new generations of gardens and farms. Let's meet Scott and learn more about the process of grafting fruit trees. So Scott, we're standing here on your farm in Svenson, Blackberry Bog Farm, and I'm really understanding how it got that name. It's a bit of a drizzly day. But this is a beautiful place. So tell us a little bit about how you got started here before we get into grafting.
Well, we just purchased the farm a year ago. And at that time, it had been abandoned for 15 years. There were two houses, still are two houses on the property, and they had been let to run down a bit. The place was totally overgrown with blackberries, as things are prone to do around this area. And there's also almost half the property. It's 31 acres, and about half the property is very wet. And so we came up with the name Blackberry Bog Farm, which seemed very appropriate, especially when we made that first trip in and we're down a little path through the field that now has become a driveway. And there were blackberries encroaching. So that was the history. But very quickly, we started clearing blackberries, fixing up the houses. We started with cut flowers last year, growing cut flowers. Of course, we have about 30 elk that come through our area on a regular basis.
As one does.
Yes, they kind of like the spot. And so the flower farm has, the flower field has a 7-foot fence around it if we're going to grow flowers. But that's where we started with those flowers, with plans to expand into sheep. In the back of the farm, there are about a dozen old apple trees and three or four pear trees that are probably 100 years old, more or less. Some of them had fallen over and had almost died. And so, you know, kind of to take us into grafting, you know, we're trying to recover those trees. And that's where our orchard is going to go. We plan on putting about 2 acres of apples and Asian pears, table grapes, blueberries, and then some cane berries. And that will happen probably next spring. We'll have to fence another area to keep the elk out of that as well. And then the area around that orchard area will be grazing for sheep.
Very ambitious plans. It was very exciting to see what you're doing with this property. It's so great. And if for some reason in the background we're going for authentic sounds here, we are hearing a little bit of traffic noise from Highway 30. The property is visible from the highway.
We sit between New 30 and Old 30, just to the west of Svenson Market Road. So if you're driving east on 30 and you're kind of starting up the hill and you just cross Bear Creek, you look out to the right and there'll be a red barn and a yellow house out in the field. And that is Blackberry Bog Farm.
Nice. So let's get into grafting,
because
that's how I met you, really, and got to know you first as an expert grafter, and you taught me how to graft.
Yes. How did those come out, by the way?
They did great. Wonderful. You know, I was so proud of myself, and it is such a cool feeling
to
have grafted a fruit tree.
Yes.
So, but for those of you who don't know what grafting is and why you graft, maybe give a little background about what is grafting and what kind of plants do you graft and why would you do that?
Absolutely. The former biology teacher in me is going to come out now just
do
a little
it.
Bit. So let's just talk about an apple, because apples are very simple to talk about. If we were to take an apple and we planted that apple, and we planted the seeds from that apple, we would get a tree that was a cross between the two parents. The one parent would be the tree that the apple is born on, but the other parent would be who knows what tree, wherever the pollen came from, to make that fertile apple. And you have to have a fertile seed to form the apple. So we really don't know what kind of tree we would get if we planted that seed.
And this is true of all apple trees.
This is true of many, many fruits. They're not self-fertile. And so they will, like a blueberry, for example, is going to be fertilized.
They won't come true from seed.
Right. They will not come true from seed. So if we want to have a plant that is just like its parent, then we are going to do what would be called vegetative propagation, which in this case is grafting. So we're going to take a stick or a bud from the apple tree that we want to duplicate, and we're going to make a clone. We're going to attach it to a rootstock. So one of the reasons that we graft is that we want to get an exact duplicate, replicate of the parent tree. There are other reasons that we may graft as well. In the case of apples, if I plant that seed, it's probably going to be about 10 years before I'm going to get apples from that apple tree. It's called a seedling. It takes a long time to mature. When that tree does mature, it's going to be very large, which is nice in that it will be above the reach of the elk, but it will also be impossible for me to harvest.
It's above your reach, too.
Because it's going to be 30 feet tall. And that gets awkward to harvest, especially as one, you know, ages if they have a hobby farm or a backyard orchard, you know, and even in
it can take up a lot of room.
And in a commercial environment also, it's much more difficult to prune. It's more difficult to harvest. There are rootstocks which will dwarf the tree. And there are dozens of different rootstocks which have been developed in this country through Cornell University. There's a whole Geneva line. In England, there's the East Malling Research Station, which does the whole M series. The Russians have a B series.
And these are trees that are bred specifically to be
rootstock,
like the bottom of the plant.
The bottom of the plant. That's correct. And so they're bred for their also disease resistance and their precociousness. So how quickly they will make this bud or this stick bear fruit.
I love that it's called precociousness.
So I said that if I planted this seed, it will be 10 years before I'll get an apple.
Yeah.
If I graft onto rootstock, I will probably get my first apple in 3 years, and I will probably start getting very good apple production in years four and five.
So it's a huge difference. Yeah. Plus, you know what you're getting.
Plus, you know exactly what you're getting. Plus, you can have disease resistance to fire blight and other diseases. So there are many different advantages to this rootstock. I have grafted for years and years. I've grafted apples. I've grafted pears. I've grafted plums. But commercially, almost every tree that you would buy in a nursery is commercially grafted. So if you get a Crimson King maple, one of the scarlet maples, it's actually a grafted tree in most instances. Roses are usually grafted. Weeping cherry trees are usually grafted. So many, many things that we have in our gardens now have been grafted. Fruit trees are almost always grafted.
Is that, can I ask you, so sometimes you have a really old tree in your garden and the top maybe is like a flowering tree, but then you get some spurs coming out from the base and they may produce little bits of weird fruit or a different colored flower. Is that the rootstock?
That would be the rootstock, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so if you
can that happen with apple trees as well?
Absolutely. And if you get a grafted tree from your nursery or if you build one yourself, you want to make sure that graft union is not planted below the surface of the ground, because if it gets below the ground, you're going to lose the effect of that dwarfing from that rootstock. But even if you plant it properly, you may still get suckers off of the roots.
So you just prune those off.
Just prune those off. So I've grown rootstock into apple trees just to see what they produce. And one of them had thorns on it. And some apples do have thorns, yes. So this particular rootstock had thorns. Another one formed apples. It bloomed. It had apples, which were approximately the size of golf balls and just about as hard. They never ripened. They were terrible, bitter little things. But it wasn't being grown for its apples. It was being grown for its precociousness, for its dwarfing characteristics, for its disease resistance, for other purposes. And so, you know, we graft the apple that we want onto that rootstock.
That is so fascinating and so cool. So you have old fruit trees here on your property that you are rescuing in a sense, because these trees, how long do fruit, I mean, you said these are hundreds of years old, but how long?
I'd say about 100 years old. The property here, the best that we can figure out, was probably started in 1884 is when we think that the house was built. The first house, and then there was a second house that was built in the 1950s. But it's my understanding that as part of the homesteading process, there was an expectation that fruit trees would be grown mm-hmm. on that property in order to prove up on the property sometimes. But in any case, there were 12 live apple trees on the property when we moved in. Now, some of them were nothing more than a single stick poking out of a bramble of blackberries.
Yeah.
But even from that, you can graft. And so there are two different times a year that you would graft apple trees. And most of these principles apply to most fruits. You can graft in the early spring. So we've already talked about rootstock, and I'm going to use two other terms. One is scion wood. It's mm-hmm. S-C-I-O-N, like the scion. The heir to the throne would be the scion.
Okay.
The scion wood is a stick of the variety that you want to save or that you want to replicate or you want to, you know, that you want to graft. You would cut that right now in January mm-hmm. or February.
This is when you would prune your apple trees?
This is also when you would prune your apple trees. Now is a perfect time to be pruning your trees. And you would want to find wood that was new wood from last summer. So it's wood that has just grown. And you would cut that wood, you would trim that wood off, and then you would save it for later in the spring. And to do that, you simply would seal the end with a little paraffin wax, like from a melted candle, a little bit of latex paint. You could use a grafting seal or something like that. You'd wrap it in some moist paper towels,
mm-hmm.
put it in a plastic bag, and put it in the refrigerator. And if you want to keep track of which tree you cut this from, of course, label as well. Labeling is always a challenge when you're doing this kind of thing.
So I brought some props.
I saw that, yes.
Which is going to be a little hard to convey on the radio. But I was curious about this because there was a gentleman out in Olney who was pruning his apple trees. And he said there was an amazing variety. His friend thought it was a Gravenstein, but he's not sure. This is very productive. And I said, could I have some of the cuttings from that? Because I kind of know how to graft and maybe I want to do that. So I brought some along because I was curious because I can't necessarily tell. And it's hilarious. I'm walking closer to them as if people are going to be able to see this.
I'm pointing at the trees.
So I'm pointing at these sticks. So I brought three along for Scott to look at because I was curious. One of them is clearly a lot darker and thicker, and then there's two that are a bit thinner. And how do you know if it's last year's wood?
So the best way to tell if it's last year's wood or older wood is by the size of the buds. Now, it's always the new wood is always going to be terminal growth. So it's going to be at the end of the branch, which may seem obvious, but it's going to be at the end of the branch. And if it is new wood, there will not be a flower bud there. It will only be a leaf bud. And so the bud is going to be much smaller. It's going to be very close to, and as I'm pointing at this for you. So it's going to be a smaller bud.
Uh-huh.
The size of the new growth can vary markedly. I mean, it may be the size of a Q-tip. Now, some of these old trees that I have back on the back of the property, there's very, very little new growth. And it is about maybe 2 inches long and the diameter of a Q-tip. And that's not unusual for a very old, broken-down tree. For a young, vigorous tree, you may have shoots of new growth that are 4 or 5 feet long. And at the base, it could be as big around as your finger. So you can't make any assumptions.
Okay.
So what we're looking at here could very well, and this is a 4 or 5 foot long stick, which is probably as big around as my pinky at the base and tapers up to less than a pencil on the end. This entire stick is probably new growth. And by looking at the buds, you can see that the buds are very close to the stem.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't any what look like flower buds. So I would say that this entire piece is new growth. Now, you can usually find where the new growth has come off from the old growth. Also, there will be a ring where the new season's growth. So if you follow the new season's growth down, you'll find a ring which will indicate where last year's growth began or ended, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm looking at these, I'm not seeing
anything like this. He's looking at the stem that I thought was maybe older wood, but it looks like not.
And you can't go by color necessarily. Mm-hmm. That, you know, different varieties, different mm-hmm. areas of the tree, how much sun mm-hmm. exposure they have. The color of the bark is mm-hmm. really, really doesn't. Yeah. Now, obviously, if it's covered with moss and lichens and very thick bark, but the bark will be very, very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
It'll look very new.
So you cut it now.
Yes, and usually you'll cut about 12-inch long sticks.
So could I cut this into sticks?
Absolutely, because it will stick. It'll fit in your refrigerator.
Well, that's
better.
What I was wondering. It's like these are a little
feet,
big.
This is 5 feet long.
I had it stored in a walk-in briefly when I was first handed it. And
so for those of your listeners who don't have a walk-in, they may need to. I usually go about 12 inches long.
About 12 inches, okay.
And make it short enough that it'll fit into a plastic bag.
Okay. Good tip.
Because when you graft, you will only use two or three buds on each graft. And the reason that there's logic behind this.
Uh-huh.
You might think, oh, I want to put six or seven buds on there to make sure that it's going to grow.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem that you run into with that
mm-hmm.
is that as it starts to come to life in the spring and break dormancy, each one of those buds is going to break open and it's going to start transpiring. It's going to start putting off moisture.
Mm-hmm.
Until the new joint has been firmly made, the connection between the rootstock and that scion wood, that stick that we're grafting onto there isn't good moisture transport from the roots into that scion. So the scion can dry out and then it'll die. So you can have too many buds. I usually don't do one bud because if the one bud gets damaged, then then you're sunk. But two or three buds is ideal. And on most plants, that's going to be 2 or 3 or 4 inches long. And different varieties do have different distances between the leaf nodes.
Okay.
You don't have to have long sticks. And you're not going to eventually use long sticks. It's going to be much easier to handle with short ones.
We're going to take a break now to remind you that you're listening to Coast Community Radio on KMUN 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. We're streaming live at coastradio.org, and you can listen on the mobile device of your choice using the TuneIn app. If you're just joining us on In Season, this week we're learning about fruit tree grafting with Scott Thompson of Blackberry Bog Farm in Svenson, Oregon.
The process of grafting, what is it that you're doing? Because you're kind of squishing the plants together.
Well, this is really hard to do without a diagram.
I know. I'm sorry. There's different ways of grafting,
yes.
too.
Yes. In the spring, I typically use what is called a whip and tongue graft. And so I make an angle cut on my scion wood. I make an angle cut on my rootstock. And the angles are the same angle, so they're complementary. You know, they'll fit together. Then a second cut is made on each piece so that they'll interweave. It would be almost like, interlocking your fingers together. That increases the contact of what's called the cambial layer, the cambium layer, which is the growing tissue around the plant. So when they're hooked together, you wrap it then and with the rubber band or grafting band. When they're in contact like that, as they come out of dormancy, then it's going to form a union that will be just as strong as the rest of the tree. And a few years later, you won't probably even be able to tell that it's there. So that's the kind of grafting that gets done in the spring.
Uh-huh.
That is usually the kind of grafting that gets done by hobbyists.
Okay.
And I would have to put myself in that accomplished hobbyist category until only recently. So I've done hundreds of trees over the years. This last spring, I did 200 trees, almost all either disease resistant varieties.
Okay.
So in other words, they won't get apple scab even if they're not sprayed, which in the environment here is very important. And they're going to be the basis of our organic orchard that we plant, and we'll also be selling them at farmers markets come spring for people in the area, you know, if they want to purchase them. And I also started some cider varieties.
Ooh,
and I've rescued all dozen of my trees from my backyard, from my back field. The way that most commercial grafting is done is what is called bud grafting. That's usually done in the summer, July and August, where you take a single bud from that summer's growth and you attach it to the side of the rootstock. That one I only just tried this past summer.
How did it go?
100 trees. I won't know until spring.
Oh.
Because the bud attaches, callus is formed, it attaches to the side. When they break dormancy in the spring, I'll cut the rootstock right above the bud, and then that bud should break bud and it should grow into a new tree. But I'll let you know in about 4 months.
Man, that's going to be hard to wait.
It is. Because usually with grafting, you usually know, within...
You know pretty soon.
You'll know within a month of when they come out of dormancy. And I usually wait until March or April when my rootstock is starting to come out of dormancy already. Mm-hmm. My scion wood is still dormant from being in my refrigerator.
Okay.
And then my rootstock will be pushing nutrients to my scion wood
okay.
once it's attached. So March, April is when I usually do that grafting. But then by within a month, I'll know if that graft is going to take or not. And I usually have a 95 to 98% success mm-hmm. rate on my graftings.
One thing you taught me that I thought was really good, because I actually lost a grafted tree this way, is like you wrap it with a bit of a rubber band mm-hmm. to hold it together, but at some point you need to take that rubber band off.
Absolutely.
Yes. Or else you girdle the tree.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
basically strangle it to death.
Yes.
And I did that with some grafted trees, and I felt so stupid and so bad afterwards. Like, oh man, what did I do?
Yeah, once growth has really initiated and you mm-hmm. feel like, you know, there's probably
you're pretty comfortable,
yeah,
it's taken.
You can just cut that off, and that'll fall off and degrade because those grafting bands are natural rubber, and they'll just degrade in the environment.
Well, one thing I do want to talk about, because it is super cool that you're rescuing the trees that are here on your property, but I know there's a lot of old fruit trees in this region, and you may have people that have a great tree growing in their garden or their yard or nearby that they want to save, and you are going to start offering sort of custom grafting services.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how that would work. If I've got,
sure.
There's some cool old trees in my neighborhood, and maybe I want to save that one and have a tree in my own yard, what would
I do? Well, a couple different options. So if, you know, there's always the do-it-yourself approach. So
uh-huh.
you can go out on YouTube, you can figure out how to graft, you
yeah.
can get your own tools, you can do all that. You can buy the supplies, or you could come to me, and I would be happy to do that. You know,
yeah.
that's a service that we want to start offering, because
yeah.
I've done so much grafting. And in that case, we would help the landowner to
uh-huh.
gather the scion wood, you know,
yeah.
teach them how, or do it for them, you know,
uh-huh.
as they wish. I have root stock here on property, a couple uh-huh. different kinds. Both are, you know, one would be considered a dwarf, and another would be considered a semi-dwarf.
Okay. Well, so, what's the difference in height size for those, roughly?
The one rootstock that I use is called Geneva 41,
okay.
and that would give a tree that would be about 40% of the full size of a tree. So the tree size is probably going to top out at like 8 to 10 feet.
Okay.
The other one that I use is called M7.
Yeah.
And that one's a little bigger. The nice thing about M7 is that it's widely adapted to different soil types. So it will work well in a wet soil as well in a dry sandy soil.
Which is nice out here.
Which is nice because, you know, you can go from one neighborhood to the next, and it can change in a quarter
yeah.
mile. So the M7 would be really well adapted for this area. It's a little bigger tree, which is probably going to be 60 to 70% of full size, which might be in that 15 to 20 foot range.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that depends on how you prune.
Yeah.
So a couple different options. And, you know, we gather the scion wood. If I did the grafting for someone,
uh-huh.
then they could take the tree back immediately and
uh-huh.
they could plant it. And it's going to be a tiny little thing. It's going to be about 12 inches tall. It's
mm-hmm.
going to have a few wispy little roots on the bottom of it.
Yeah.
But they're very vigorous. It'll take right off. And they can go plant it in a pot, or they can plant it in their backyard. Or we can grow it here for them for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we would grow it in a pot. And then by the next spring, it would be a whip. 3 or 4 feet tall, which means there'd be no side branches.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it was very vigorous, like what is probably a Gravenstein mm-hmm. here, which is a very vigorous tree, we could prune it back, say, in July, and it would start forming scaffold branches. So by next spring, there would be a tree that would be 4 feet high and would have 3 or 4 of its first set of branches as well. So really, that's as long as it takes. I have trees I grafted last spring that are now 4 feet tall. They have 3 or 4 branches on them. And, you know,
they're looking
theoretically
good.
By the summer of 2017, I'll be getting apples off of them.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yep,
that's
yep.
pretty cool. Do you, and I know that you've taught grafting classes
yeah.
in the past. Do you have any plans to maybe offer some of that, or would you rather do sort of a one-on-one kind of thing?
I could do the one-on-one, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been any discussions about doing any grafting classes this
mm-hmm.
year. I do plan on being at the, having a booth at the Master Gardener
Spring to Gardening
Seminar, and we'll be selling some of our apple trees there, and be showing people
yeah.
how we graft the trees and doing
yeah.
some grafting there.
So
there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Timing will be perfect. And you also are doing other things like dahlia tubers mm-hmm. and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So
We have cut flowers, and
yeah.
So we'll be selling the dahlia tubers.
Mm-hmm.
We may even have a few forced bulbs at that
nice.
Time of year coming along.
So I feel like I have to ask, because I'm always curious. So do you have a favorite variety? Like that,
of apple?
Yeah. I know it's like, what's your favorite child? But is there one that like you just kind of like, I can't imagine not having this?
You know, I am a real fan of Gala.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sweeter apple. Unfortunately, Gala
yeah.
is very prone to apple scab.
Oh,
so
that's gonna be a heartbreaker.
Oh, well, but there is an apple called Sansa. S-A-N-S-A, which is a cross between Gala and Akani. And it is scab resistant.
Ooh.
So that's the one that I'll be growing on my property. And so for so many apples, I have a dozen or so different varieties of apples.
Yeah, maybe tell us some of the varieties that you're growing.
And these are mostly things that people have not heard of before. You know, Red Delicious, Yellow Delicious, Granny Smith, those kinds of things are typically grown in a very dry environment.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sprayed heavily to prevent things like apple scab, which we do have here along the coast. But there are, I'd say a dozen or more really good varieties of apples. Many of them have come out of an organization, a cooperative organization between Purdue University, University of Illinois, and Rutgers University in New Jersey called PRI. And they have a whole series which starts with PRI called Pristine and Prima, Williams Pride, Priscilla, Surprise, you know, they have this theme.
Yeah.
But they are apples similar to apples that we would recognize.
Yeah.
But they are disease scab resistant. So there are some that are ripe as early as July.
About
the same time as transparent, only disease resistant, keeps better.
Yeah.
Williams Pride is into August. Sansa, which is the Gala clone, would be September. Many people have heard of Liberty Apple. That's another one that's good. Surprise is a Golden Delicious type.
Yeah.
So there's all these different apple varieties which people haven't heard of, but they taste just as good.
Yeah.
We'll be able to grow them commercially here, spray free along the coast.
It'd be great if you could do an apple tasting.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
That would be so much fun. Yeah, I know. I have to say I am so inspired by what you're doing here.
Thank you.
It's as I stand here, I can clearly see the remnants of the blackberry thicket that gave your farm its name. And you've done a heroic job of clearing this place. And it's just so exciting to see another farm starting up here.
Well, it's been a labor of love, but it's been something I wanted to do for 25 years. And it has been labor, but it's been, I've enjoyed every day of it.
So do you want to tell people where they can find you? What farmer's market do you do?
Sure,
do you have a website? What are some of your contacts?
So we are on Facebook. Just look for Blackberry Bog Farm. The email is very easy, blackberrybogfarm@gmail.com.
Okay.
We will be doing two markets this year. We'll be doing the Seaside Farmers Market on Wednesday afternoons from 3 to 7, and we'll be doing the Owako Farmers Market in Owako, Washington on Saturdays, I believe, from 10 until it quits.
Is it 2, 3?
2, 3, 4
in the afternoon.
In the afternoon, yes. So we'll be at those two locations.
Oh, great.
We will have a booth at the Master Gardener's Spring Garden Seminar, which is in April, but I don't recall the date. And so those are the ways that we can be found.
And you sometimes also have a flower stand.
Oh, yes, we do. We're at the Wickiup Grange
in
Swenson, right there at Market Road, right across from what's locally known as Hunt's Market. We do have a flower stand in the summer, and it's just a self-serve where we sell our bouquets.
It is so inspiring, and I'm so excited to welcome you to the North Coast farming community. This is
great.
And
thank you for coming out.
Oh, hey, this has been a really fun adventure, and I just thank you so much. And so if you want to get a hold of Scott and you want to talk about grafting, if there's some varieties that you want to save, definitely get in touch with him. He is just a font of information, and you're going to learn a lot. So it's going to be a good year.
I think so.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of In Season on Coast Community Radio. Many thanks to my guest, Scott Thompson, for sharing his knowledge about fruit trees and grafting with us. I'd also like to thank our sound editor, Katie Claiborne, for her amazing sonic stitching skills and support. And this week, I'd like to say thank you to a very special person, Anne Goldine. Anne was the host of Coast Community Radio's gardening show, Dig in the Dirt, for over 20 years. She was an amazing, inspiring person who taught us all so much, not just about gardening, but about community and friendship. Anne passed away this past week after a long and courageous battle with cancer. Thank you for all that you gave to this community, Anne. You are deeply missed, my friend.